Upgrade efficiency with NACFI's Mike Roth and friends.
Joining me on episode 15 is Kyle Treadway, Kenworth Sales Company's dealer principal, where he shares his thoughts on the dealer's role in technology integration and product development, the challenge of new technology, the technician shortage, his own dealership's growth, and he also gives some really valuable comments on natural gas, electric, and autonomous trucks.
Today we have joining us Kyle Treadway, dealer principal for Kenworth Sales Company. Hello, Kyle. Thanks for joining us today.
Good afternoon. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so I'm really excited about this because I think oftentimes people don't understand the role that truck dealerships play in, you know, supporting technology, oftentimes brought by, you know, manufacturers and fleets. So I'm really excited to explore that a little more with you, Kyle. And but let's start by just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to run the truck dealerships that that you have.
Sure. I'm a third generation Kenworth dealer. So I grew up in the business. My grandparents started our company right after World War II in 1945. So I've been around it my whole life. I did leave. I went away to practice law for a few years, but then I came back and I've been back in the business since 1987.
I recall when I was at Navistar working with truck dealers, and it seemed to be sort of a thing of, you know, somebody being in the business and then, it transitioning down to next generations. I mean, what was that like for you? It sounds like when you left, you may have wasn't sure you were going to stick with it, but how was that for you?
Well, yeah, growing up, I had no thought that this would be my career or be my future. But when I went away from it, I soon recognized what I liked about it and came back to it. And I was lucky enough that my father was willing to give me a chance at it. So it's right. It's kind of a tradition in our industry. Both our customers, our suppliers, our employees, all are multi-generation. It's kind of, we call it diesel in the blood.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when I met you, you also had an additional role. I mean, you became sort of a leader of truck dealers with a role at the American Truck Dealers Association. Do I have that right? And can I tell us about that honor that you had and what led you to take on that role?
Sure. ATD, American Truck Dealers, is a division of NADA, the National Automobile Dealers Association. And that entity has been around for, over 100 years. But the truck division is a small part of it. We're about 10% of the total membership. And I got involved when a friend of mine asked me to take over the vacant seat, that the representation for Kenworth dealers. And I thought, I want to meet other dealers that are outside of my network, and because I know that we all slice the pie a little bit differently, and I wanted to meet some folks and broaden my horizons. And when I got into it, I was really astounded by the length and breadth and depth of the work that they do. So I stuck around for about 10 years, and the last 4 years of those, I was the chair of the board, the national board.
Yeah, so I guess a little plug for professionals out there. I mean, get involved. Get involved in, you know, associations or groups that are in your area. So I always ask, we call this freight efficiency with Mike Roth and friends. Do you remember how we met, Kyle?
I do. I was coming to the end of my term at ATD, and you called me saying that you had put together a consortium of carriers, manufacturers, suppliers, and others who are interested in freight. And so you were looking for a voice of the distribution side. Look, truck dealers, that's what we do. We represent the manufacturers and suppliers. And you were looking for an additional board member. And so I agreed to meet with you, and we sat down for a breakfast. And by the end of it, I was convinced that you were really enthusiastic and sincere. And I think I got a glimpse of your vision, and I wanted to be a part of it.
Huh. Yeah, I remember that. That was that in Vegas, maybe?
Probably, yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, it could have been. I do remember that. And you've been a real interesting voice to the board. I mean, I think just dealers, and we're going to get into that here, I think dealers bring a really interesting perspective to all of this. So how do dealers support and deal with their manufacturers? And maybe give us a little bit of the, you know, how is it structured? I mean, are you independent of the truck OEMs or not? And just, you know, walk us through what it is that dealers do.
Sure. In many ways, we're a franchise system, and in some regards, we're not. But basically, we are privately owned, locally owned businesses that represent a manufacturer, and so we are either exclusive or, in some cases, we represent more than one manufacturer. And in terms of our role, I like to think of us as kind of a hub in the wheel of the network that brings together carriers, manufacturers, suppliers, regulators, that we're kind of the conduit that gets everybody to talk to each other. And so we're local, we're part of the community, but at the same time, we're part of a national network of our brand, dealer network. And so we try to blend those worlds together.
Yeah, and you've got trucking, sort of just the nature of trucking supports that, right? You've got interstate commerce with, you know, over-the-road tractors, and then, of course, you then support more local vocational trucks, I would guess, right, with dump trucks and, you know, refuse and all the things that stay more locally. So, you know, I think of dealers like a new truck sales, maybe used truck sales, parts, service. What else, or does that represent what you kind of the role you play for the industry?
That's the traditional role, but nowadays we do more. We actually do finance, insurance, lease, and rental. And in terms of finance, either we help you find the appropriate financing, or we actually can lend you the money. So we either broker it or we carry it.
Wow, kind of a one-stop shop. So I get now more the hub and spoke analogy. So in the last, you know, there's been a lot of new technologies come to the marketplace. So how has that been with respect to, you know, you supporting the industry? I mean, I'm thinking back to the emissions changes of the last decade and now a lot of fuel economy and safety, all that kind of stuff. So how has it been playing that role? I got to believe, my guess is it's been pretty challenging.
It's been very challenging. We're a very cyclical industry already. And all of these changes, whether they were prompted by federal regulations or just the advancement of technologies for their own sake, have made our industry rise and fall even more dramatically over the past 20 years. So the biggest part, of course, has been the emissions and fuel economy regulations, and those have come in waves. They started back in the late 1990s. And the first pass at it was really kind of a free-for-all. It was a lot of spaghetti that was thrown against the wall to see if it would stick. A lot of technologies that were tried. Many failed, some succeeded. Everyone had an idea about what they wanted to do to try and solve this, solve the problem and reach the target that the federal government had set. And the carriers, usually the large carriers who were willing to be the guinea pigs, because they had the budgets and they had the appetite to be on the leading edge. And our role as a dealer was to try and help, again, put that together, to align some fleet with somebody who had a product that they wanted to introduce.
The large fleets tend to already have a relationship with the OEM because of just their pure size, right? I mean, they're oftentimes national accounts and so forth. So you end up being a smaller part of the sales process and a bigger part of the parts and distribution parts and service process, or am I kind of like, is that kind of a myth and I'm sort of missing the point?
Well, in many regards, we help with when the large fleets are being the test subjects. We help with the logistics. We are, of course, the field representatives. We help them with maintaining the equipment, monitoring it. Kind of also in terms of when they're ready to decommission a certain technology, whether it's a test engine and it has to be removed from the chassis, we might participate in that as well.
Yeah, and you probably like that, right? That's a way you can get some insights into the future, I would guess.
Absolutely.
And how else do they, the relationship, and I'm guessing, you know, your Kenworth dealers and relationship with Kenworth might be different than international dealers with international and Freightliner and Daimler and so forth. But do they involve you in product strategies, new ideas for what's coming down the pike?
Yeah, they do. Not in all cases, but they want to get as much feedback. And of course, we see and touch so many different operators that we can quickly get them a cross section of feedback on a new technology. So they really like that one-stop shop almost scenario.
Okay. Yeah. So back to your organization a little bit, just because I think it's important that listeners sort of get a feel for this, because not everyone, a lot of the suppliers and others don't really work a lot with dealers. But tell us about your footprint prior to, and now you've expanded east. So tell us a little bit about the footprint before, which is mostly Western, and then what caused you to grow and move east, and what's that going to mean for your future?
Sure. Well, we started in the Intermountain West in Utah, and that was, I said, in 1945. And we really, like a lot of the industry, consolidation and mergers and acquisitions really took hold starting about 30 years ago. It became pretty clear early on that you either assimilate or you go. You grow or you go. And so we grew. We added, we're in 7 Western states now. We have 23 locations out there. And then to what you're mentioning, we just recently added 8 locations in 3 mid-Atlantic states. So we're now up to 31 locations, 1,300 employees in 10 states.
And why jump so far east? Wouldn't it be easier if you just kind of expanded your boundary?
It would, yeah. To have a contiguous territory makes a lot more sense. It's easier logistically. But this was an opportunity that came knocking on my door. I didn't go looking for it. And as I thought about it, I realized that it's another leg to the table. So economically, if one area or region is suffering economically, another is likely not to be. So the distance in this case actually could be an advantage. So that's why we did it.
Oh, very good. Very good. How about new technology in the service and parts area? I got to believe that we've become a much more electronic. Yesterday I was talking with a Cummins engineer, and he said he was one of the first 5 controls engineers hired at Cummins 35 years ago. And I was like, oh my God, there must be hundreds or thousands, electronic controls engineers at Cummins now. I have to believe that the technology in the shop has been a big expense for you and a change. I mean, I the diesel mechanic becoming much more computer and electronic. How's that going? What's that meant for dealers like you in terms of investment and training and finding talent? And that will lead us into my next conversations about maybe electric trucks and some other things.
Sure.
But first, just like what's that? How big is that challenge on the dealer level?
It's pretty intimidating. We have a technician shortage, just like there is a driver shortage, and it's, I think, even more acute in that we can invest as much as $150,000 in a single technician to train him up to understand all of the electronics, all of the alternate technologies, everything out there. It's incredibly expensive. It's a long learning curve. It takes us 5 years to get somebody completely certified and up to speed, so they're a journeyman level technician. Incredibly expensive.
Wow. And do you repair other truck brands other than Kenworth? And so do they need to be trained on the other brands, or don't have to worry about that?
Yeah, we do. The dividing line between us, of course, is warranty work. So I cannot do warranty work on a Freightliner, but I can do anything outside of that on any brand of model of truck.
Yeah, so that makes it pretty complex.
Yep.
Very good. All right, so we talked a little bit about how you get involved in new technologies, maybe working with a fleet, trying something new, and helping to deploy that in a prototype or field test mode, and then you know, sort of moving on. And then as the offering becomes wider and broader and more customers, then you got to put this infrastructure in place we were talking about. So let's, if you don't mind, I got a few technologies I want to ask you about, some in the rearview mirror and some in the future. But first, so you ready for this? It's sort of like a hot, you know, a hot mic sort of thing. First, natural gas, or really sort of that was kind of the big first alternative fuels. There was some liquefied natural gas, compressed natural gas, but how did you deal with that, and where are you at now?
Well, we were a big proponent of natural gas early on. We jumped in with both feet. We actually built a few dealerships that we specifically modified our service bay so that we could take care of natural gas vehicles, because there's a lot of special requirements that you have to put in place because of the dangerous nature of the gas if it leaks or escapes. And then we also added a small fleet of natural gas vehicles to our rental fleet so that carriers could test one under real-world conditions. Unfortunately, in 2009, when the price of petroleum and diesel and the economy all collapsed, it didn't pencil out anymore for somebody to spend the big bucks to buy a natural gas vehicle, hoping that they would save on the cost of the fuel over the life of that disappeared. And so natural gas right now, in terms of long-haul transportation, is pretty much collapsed.
Yeah, and as we experienced with Run On Less, and, you know, we had a UPS CNG truck in, but, you know, that works because they go long distances, but very predictable routes, and they're coming back. They do what they call, you know, dedicated fast turns. So just a few unique spots. I get it. And we'll see where, you know, where natural gas might go. But a lot of the people that were looking at natural gas, the second one I'm going to ask you about is electric trucks. So much hype around electric trucks. And, you know, you're on NACFI's board. We've been really taking a real pragmatic look at electric trucks, and we definitely see it happening, but a bunch of challenges. So, but very much from your seat and leading these dealerships, what's your thinking on electric trucks now?
Well, because of the natural gas experience, I'm more conservative. I'm more skeptical. I think, like natural gas, it's not the silver bullet. It's going to fit in a certain niche. And it's, as the NACFI report goes into great detail, there's still some pretty serious issues on weight, battery weight, the range of these trucks, the charging infrastructure, the recharge time, the price of the equipment. So you really have to have a specific niche that this is going to fit into, whether it's a closed loop system or local last mile delivery. It's got a place. It's today, with the battery technology as it is, it's not going to fit into the long haul world.
Yeah, and in just the last couple of weeks, you know, Kenworth announced the medium duty. You know, they're taking orders for electric trucks and medium duty, right, with a model. And yep. So how do you, maybe this is a weird question, but how do you balance the OEM starting to take orders and push you with some trepidation that you're talking about with natural, like what you know, given what you've seen with natural gas?
Well, remember too that the manufacturers are under a compulsory order from the federal regulators, as well as some of the state regulators like California, that they so much percent of their production has to meet new emissions and fuel economy standards. So they're required to go into these alt fuel technical areas. And I'm speaking from the realm of the marketplace. What's the market going to accept, and where is it going to, you know, actually purchase these and use them? It's only, in my mind, going to happen with some government subsidies, because you can manufacture these vehicles, but I don't know that folks are necessarily going to buy them.
Yeah, you know, you're kind of in a interesting place, sort of where the rubber meets the road with respect to whether or not regulations are pulling a technology before its time or not. So we're right there with you, Kyle. But okay, and then the last one is around automation, all the safety equipment, cameras, you know, even the promise of self-driving trucks. I mean, that seems to be a sort of a not a revolution, but sort of a, just a little evolutionary piece here with just a little more every model year.
And I think actually here is where the market and the regulations are in sync, because there is much more acceptance of these. We're already at level two right now. We're using automated transmissions, lane departure warnings, adaptive cruise control, and there's a whole slew of these automations that are coming, these driver assists, ADAS systems that are out there, and they're being accepted both in terms of the drivers, the operators, as well as the fleet owners, because they can attract drivers, and there's this driver shortage. If they've got an edge to get guys in those seats, they'll use it.
Yeah, it's almost like we're doing a little bit of exploratory work and thinking about the future of this automation, and it is sort of counterintuitive. I agree with you. I think drivers are really appreciating the technology. It's a little hard to get used to, but right now, and so that's a good thing, not that we're trying to pull the drivers out of the trucks. Any other technologies come to mind?
Yeah, actually, we're starting to see some R&D with hybrid technologies, specifically hydrogen. Now, it's nowhere near costing out to make sense, but the logic of the technology is pretty interesting, because the byproduct is water, and that's pretty interesting. The range is similar to what we get with a diesel vehicle. The torque and the horsepower are pretty comparable too. So if we can get past the costing, then this is pretty impressive.
Yeah, yeah. A couple more things before we close out. We talked about parts and service before, and you know, the technology around that. But where do you see that going in the future with respect to you know, leaps forward in that particular area?
Sure. The buzzword in our field right now is predictive maintenance, and that's based upon artificial intelligence and remote connectivity. And with those promise a lot, that we should be able to schedule more conveniently with our customers, you know, aligning and minimizing their downtime. There's a caveat in all of this, though, because my experience as a dealer is that even though customers are increasingly demanding more scheduled time and appointments, they're not very good at keeping them. I would say at least half the appointments that we set with customers, they don't keep. They don't honor.
Oh.
And so there's got to be this back and forth. We as a supplier are willing to, you know, fund this and to put up the structure, but we've got to have the carriers who are going to likewise support it appropriately.
Yeah, I got to believe that will happen, though, because, you know, part of it is just now you'll know where the truck is. So, you know, if the truck's just because of telematics and scheduling and all that, I mean, you'll know if the truck's 2 hours away or 10 minutes away. And some of that ought to work its way out. Yeah. So to close this, Kyle, I mean, what else would you like us to know about sort of the role of truck dealers and maybe how can we as an industry, and I'm saying, you know, whether it's manufacturers or suppliers, even government, people doing regulations, or fleets themselves or universities, how can the whole group help the dealers be more successful as we kind of close out this chat?
Sure. Kind of driving home the point that I was talking to about there before, the communication. We have to talk to each other. And we have to be on and open about what's going on, what's working, and what's not working. Our goal as a dealer is to help our customers succeed, because if we do that, they tell their friends, they tell their friends, and so on. And in this age of social media, that chain is our lifeblood. So we need to be talking to each other more honestly and more openly about what works, what doesn't work, and helping to do our own part.
That's great, Kyle. So we'll wrap it up there. And, you know, over my, I guess now 35 years in trucking, I have learned to really appreciate what the truck dealers do for the industry. And in particular, as we ramp up the technology integration and you know, helping be that hub for the industry and, you know, kind of demanding that communication and calling things exactly where they are, is good advice. So the dealers I found, sometimes they're a modest group, sometimes extremely vocal. But it's always been good working with that part of the industry. And thank you very much for joining us today, Kyle.
Thank you, and thanks to NACFI for all the good work they're doing.
Freight Efficiency with NACFI's Mike Rosenfrenz.